Well, Sean Callanan's the same. He's our digital sports guru. He joins us each Saturday morning to talk sport in the digital world. How are you, mate?
I'm good, thanks. I'm good, thanks. Really, yeah, been a busy week in the sports digital world.
What's been happening? Is there the Olympics are on the horizon, and is the digital space the new sports battleground, particularly when it comes to the big money?
It is. There was an announcement this week that the Olympics have brought in, put their arm around Twitter and put their arm around Foursquare and said, help us out and
stop... It's enough to make me feel a little bit uncomfortable, Amanda.
And stop ambush marketing. And so to a certain degree, Twitter and Facebook, although they're getting bigger and bigger, are still relatively startups. And so they want to cozy up to the big beast that is the Olympics. But eventually, money will talk. And really, there's not much Twitter and Foursquare can do if a big brand like Nike wants to run a really successful campaign that's driven by their athletes and driven by the people. So yeah, it's definitely a ground for ambush marketing. You know, Nike is running out with they're really pushing hard into digital at the minute. They're running a campaign called Make It Count, and they're running with all their athletes. So. They're trying to bring in, you know, policies around protecting the sponsors. But when the fans of athletes are jumping on board and you do a campaign that can go viral, we talked about Kony 2012 and how it went viral. If Nike can produce great videos, then the people that have paid the money, in this case Adidas have paid over $100 million to be the official partners of the Olympics.
It's a lot of money.
It is a lot of money. And so it's a matter of... making sure that they can deliver. So really, Adidas has to pour a lot of money into digital to make sure that they protect their space from a, you know, mentions and conversation point of view. I mean, it's not new. I remember in 1992 when Magic Johnson and Michael Jordan put a towel over their tracksuit because it was a Reebok, and they obviously had competing shoe deals. So, you know, ambush is not anything new to the Olympics. But yeah, from a digital point of view, they don't really have as much control as they do from a TV and a media standpoint.
Well, in the digital sphere, what do you think are some of the most effective strategies in trying to combat that sort of guerrilla marketing?
Well, really, it's you've got to go out and fight fire with fire. You've got to match the Nikes of the world with a really good campaign that is going to engage an audience. You really can't be in that passive mode. And that's pretty much what an Olympic sponsorship to a certain degree might have been. It's not enough just to have the logo on the jersey or on the field. You've got to participate and amplify what you've been doing. So, you know, that's where, in this case, we're talking about Nike versus Adidas. Nike's going and, you know, they're calling their campaign the 2012 campaign. Is that associated with the Olympics? No, they're just making it their yearly campaign. Is there a slight association with the Olympics? Is there more Olympic athletes in their campaigns? Yes, there is. So Adidas really needs to make sure that it can leverage its partners and its association. Obviously, the Olympics need to develop a bit better digital presence from a website point of view because it's so TV focused at the moment. You know, they need to have a destination for the fans to go, and that's where the official advertisers and sponsors can get a little more lift.
But this is where it's fascinating for the Olympic Games because they have locked down so tightly on access to information and to content. So, you know, for instance, Amanda and Sean, if you're not a rights holder and you want to play a little bit of an Olympic event, say someone wins a gold medal, you can only, I think, take about 7 or 8 seconds of the event and play it. So they're trying to lock that down. And when it comes to the digital media and social media, that's like herding butterflies. You can't do it. So their mentality doesn't really, I think, allow them to actually conceptualize what digital media and social media are about and then use it effectively.
And it's been so TV focused. So, you know, they're really focused on protecting the rights holders. NBC paid a lot of money in the US and they're trying to protect that TV audience. But 4 years is a long time in digital, and the audience has changed and is moving. They are looking to do a lot more stuff with YouTube. They're sort of playing catch up. In that they're only really running their event every 4 years. So major events, like the Rugby World Cup, the Soccer World Cup, the Olympics, have to really assess what they're doing from a digital point of view, a long way out. And so they're trying to bring in the social media platforms to say, help us out here. But I'm sure if someone went to those platforms and said, we're going to spend a whole lot of cash on your platform, I know where the Twitters and Foursquares will go. They'll go with the cash.
Now, Sean, one of my big bugbears is when you go to a big sporting event and you can't get internet access. What are stadiums trying to do about the issue of getting Wi-Fi for fans to be able to use?
Well, yeah, and that's going to be, again, massive problem for the guys at LOCOG and the Olympics, because the problem with stadiums is, first of all, they're built to block your phone. There's concrete and steel everywhere, and then you have a concentration of people. And smartphones are automatically draining the bandwidth that's available. Even if you're not taking your phone out, we've discussed whether you're tweeting or not, just actually having a smartphone in your pocket's automatically starting to drain the bandwidth as people have push notifications and messages are coming through. And so it's a constant problem for all the people who are building the stadiums and people running the stadiums. AT&T Park, which is San Francisco Giants, which is a very savvy, tech-savvy park. You've been
there? I've been there many times. Magnificent sports venue.
And they've been having they've had Wi-Fi in their stadium, which has been partly sponsored and run with partners. But it's upward of six figures to keep that Wi-Fi up and running. So you can see the challenges that the MCG and ANZ Stadium have in trying to deliver Wi-Fi. And so what it's now coming down to the people who are building the stadiums to actually integrate the technology into the stadiums.
Has anybody been able to do it successfully yet?
So one that has done successful, I actually just saw Rob Heineman from the Kansas City actually tweet a picture of Livestrong Park. And they were fortunate when they built it, and they built it to be a really technology savvy park. But Google is also running out their version of the NBN. And so they effectively put the hub under the stadium. So the best place to get Wi-Fi and get internet connectivity is actually at Livestrong Park. So, you know, maybe if the telcos, when they're rolling at the NBN, decide to base it out of the stadiums, it makes sense. That's where it's obviously going to be the hot point of any traffic. You know, in Melbourne, if you put it in that Olympic Park precinct, it might actually make sense. But it is a constant challenge whether, you know, the fans want it for free. The sponsors want some value for it. Is there any, you know, are you going to look at an ad because you can get Wi-Fi? Will it come down to, you know, potentially giving over data? Will you be able to, you know, if you hand over your email address and marketers can email you about it, will that be enough to get you free Wi-Fi?
Sean Callan is with us, our sports geek. Remind people where they can find you on Twitter, Sean.
Sports Geek HQ or Sean Callan, sportsgeek.com.au.
Talking about sport and the digital world, just on that though, I mean, the AFL is just pouring an absolute fortune into its own media company. It's basically taking its media in-house. And if it's
gone from 15 people to 120 people in the last 3 months.
I think that tells you everything you need to know about what they're trying to do. So surely they are wanting to own a huge real estate in this space. And if they're doing that, surely they've got to provide the infrastructure at their venues to deliver their own content. I mean, it'd be ridiculous to have all these people banging away on computers and tweeting away, and then when you get to game day and you want to be at the ground, you can't read anything that they're writing.
Well, that is a concern that they, you know, that they have to provide. But it is a problem between venue operators, and that's where it's different in the States to Australia. A lot of the teams in Australia are just tenants and are just renting out the venue for the day. So it's really the venue operator's issue. In the States, obviously, stadiums get built for teams. Teams have a bit bigger say in the stadium. So that's the, you know, with the MCG, for example, you're working with the Trust, you're working with the MCC. So it's a delicate thing. It comes down to who pays for it. So potentially, AFL might have to foot that bill.
Now, Sean, on the podium this week, you're looking at people who are within different sporting organisations and using the digital world quite effectively. Who's made your 1, 2, 3?
Yeah, so I pretty much give these medals out because these guys helped me out this week at EdTech Sydney. They were on my panel talking sports digital. It was a pretty good week. I actually found out from the EA Sports marketing VP that the Pope plays FIFA on the Wii. So
which team does he choose?
He's Messi, of course.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
Be.
So I didn't find out his handle. So just keep searching. If there is a handle on FIFA called the Pope,
you right might singer actually, FC.
Yeah, exactly. So the bronze went to Rob Scigliotti, Rob Squiller, who's from the A League, and he actually talked about how the A League.